Hi. Welcome to Coming to America, our podcast about immigrants. Today, our guest is Elizabeth Chaler. She's from Switzerland. She moved to US when she was 17 to go to high school and university in California. She has lived in Portland for 32 years. She studied art at university, and she is a journeyman painter and has her own painting company here in Portland called Painting Blue Skies. In her free time, she takes trips to other countries, spend time with family and friends. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So we just discussed your last name, Chaler, is Romansh?
Romansh.
Romansh. That's how you pronounce that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that language?
It's a language that was concocted by the Roman settlements that were up in the Alps. We're looking at about 2,000 some odd years ago, and they left their Latin language there, mixed it up with some local stuff.
Okay, so and you speak Latin effectively.
So it's a Latin-based language, yeah.
People
are speaking it again more. It was kind of dying out, but
yeah,
that's my family, but I don't speak it. So.
You don't speak it?
No.
Okay. So Switzerland, let's talk about that country. So it's Romansh is the language, then it's French, German, and Italian, right?
Yeah.
Four languages, four different. It's known as the like an example of a multicultural society, right, in Europe. It's a federation of cantons, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember when Czechoslovakia was about to be established after First World War, 1918, the model was Switzerland. The Czech president went to US to Wilson, and he's like, I have a concept. It's Czech, Slovaks. It was Western Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
And we will live in one federation similar to Switzerland.
Okay.
And we got approved and whatever. Then Stalin took the Ukraine after Second World War, and then 94 we split.
Okay.
While Switzerland is still together.
Yes, it is still together. We seem to work it out in a very slow process. That's even though it's quite aggravating to the citizens, but we have, I think, an extremely slow moving democracy, and it's very conservative in that sense. So even though it's annoying because you can't get shit done, and it's not the most, I think, creative atmosphere, it's troublesome for people, but it also really slows down
the negatives.
It slows down impulsive contributions, you know, and I think ultimately we found that to be a good thing.
Yeah, good thing.
You know, even though certain things sound really good in the moment, everyone gets like, yeah, let's do it, but then it's like, well, we're a very consensus-based government, so people have to like sign up. Like, you can't just, you know, make shit happen. You have to like get people, the different parties, to be okay with it, and the people to be okay with it. So it really is this very slow wheel, but yeah,
but steady.
Yeah, steady, and then you have people are invested.
Yes,
in what happens.
Yeah.
So even though they might not be perfectly happy with it, there's investment, and I think that's really important. So yeah,
it's almost. Switzerland is very interesting because it has no capital city, right?
Yeah.
So you showing.
Well, Bern is the capital. Yeah.
Well, technically, when you go on Wikipedia, it has no capital. Bern is an administrative center, but they.
Yeah.
When I look into it, I don't think so. There's another country like that.
Okay.
They would not. They don't want to have elites, so they said in order to make sure all cantons, right, all regions are represented.
Yes.
Same.
Yes.
There's no DC for them, District of Columbia, that, you know, attracts.
Yes.
I mean, you have a Bern, so there's lots of lobbies there.
Yes.
But the signal is there's no city that is above others.
Yes.
So I like that. I also like when you said the slow moving bureaucracy, it's like if citizens have an issue, they need to get 100,000 signatures.
Yeah.
And it needs to be discussed in a parliament.
Yes.
So that's as direct democracy as you can have, right?
Yes.
Kind of nice.
Yes.
But the in US.
You know so much more about Switzerland than I do. I love this. I learned from
Let me tell you.
Coming, I know. It's great. I love it. Like the nitty gritty of it all. Yeah, it's great.
Okay. Let me tell you about Switzerland. Regions, great. Right? The Alps, then the plateau where everything happens.
Yeah.
And then there's a third one. I forgot. What is it?
The Jura or the...
No, it's the Alps, then plateau, and then there's some kind of something.
Okay.
Another maybe mountains or something.
Okay.
But I found Switzerland very fascinating in that sense that it's a landlocked country.
Yeah. Right?
So you have no sea, no way of colonialism, others, no you know, army to expand. And you've never been really conquered, maybe once or twice.
Uh-huh.
And then you survive all the wars around you raging because of the geography. No army would attack Switzerland through the Alps because it was almost impossible. So the way how geography plays,
yes,
you kind of had that like a brewing ground of direct democracy since 2-3 cantons got together and then grow into multiple cantons and grow and grow. So that's very unique because my country in Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic, was always conquered or, you know, the war just comes every 40 years in Europe.
That is a story that is told. That, say, example, World War II, the reason we didn't get run over is because we have these Alps. And hearkening back to a historic story, of course, it's true that the Alps, say, Hannibal and his, you know,
army of
you know, elephants had to trek over. But they did trek over, and so did the Romans. And they, you know, but it, yes, of course, back in the day when... You know, military, what do I say? Military.
Was walking.
Yeah, it was walking. You know, it was a whole different kind of thing. Marching. So, yeah, an Alp could prohibit, and anyway, passes. Yeah. There's just a few passes and you get control of it. Okay. But now we're in the modern age and you know, we have flying jets and long range missiles. The point is, I think it's a story that's utilized, certainly as a Swiss. That grew up in a time post-war reckonings of Europe and trying to take more honest look about what's actually happened, especially under National Socialism, Germany and Nazism. And I think most people at this point in Switzerland would say the reason that we survived the war in the way that we did with an unscathed surface, truly, is because of our full cooperation with the Nazi government, our willingness to allow them to complete control of our police, our military, our have say about how everything is done and play along with the wishes that they had. And this cooperation also in conjunction with being very important manufacturers of weapons and being completely willing to chuck every Jewish refugee that came into Swiss country immediately out. And so, I mean, these were really, sorry, I mean, I'll go on, you can edit this out. But these were big things. I mean, other countries like Holland and Czech Republic, I mean, people were, you know, France, I mean, they were, excuse me, they said, you know, fuck you to the Nazis and were doing things like they had a resistance movement. They had the, and even though it might not seem like militarily very important, it was, it pissed the Germans off, you know, enough that they were like, well, fuck you too. We're going to take you over. And Switzerland was completely compliant. So that is, you know, I think geography is a,
that it's part of it, but
played, that played in the past, but it is not, it is not the name of the game. Yeah. I mean, it is not the name of the game in the 20th century for sure. I don't, I my knowledge kind of dies with that. I don't know, World War II as well.
I
I'd like to bring that in as
This is great because it, actually reckoning. I think there was a reckoning in Switzerland in the 90s when when you know there was an admission for the storing of the Nazi gold right, so you I like how the nation went because we to our audience Europeans look at Switzerland like, oh my goodness, you are the secretive bankers with the vaults underground and you just protect that wealth for whoever is in power around
Well, just for self-serving. I mean, it's self-serving. I mean, we have our bank that needs to be.
But I think you actually that's what I like about that your direct democracy and then the society. Mm-hmm. You actually had that reckoning in '90s. I think as a country that you really went through it, and there was some kind of catharsis. Mm. And then you can see it even in the bank. Now the bank secrecy is over, right? In like 2004 or something. Mm-hmm. But again. Is your master now US that came and says, hey, unlock these documents, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Swiss bandit and says yes.
Yes.
Again, I've never seen perfect country.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So
sure, we're continuously reckoning. I mean, I you know, colonialism is a theme in Switzerland right now. I was just there last month and, you know, I saw a big, an exhibit in the National Museum.
Oh, nice. What city?
It's called Colonial. And
it's in Geneva or the city?
No, it's in Zurich. The
Zurich.
National Museum is
I
in
see.
Zurich. And it was very clear and thorough about the ways in which Switzerland has strongly, strongly bolstered our economy and through exploits, connections, you know, being wheeler dealers in the whole trade of cotton, in the whole trade of slaves, in the whole trade of all that commerce that was happening, mm-hmm. you know, to the horrendous pain of people and exploitation of countries economically and, you know, personally to the people. So they, Switzerland's, you know, looking at stuff, and a lot of people don't want to know about this at all because, of course, Swiss citizens, like anywhere, you know, you want to rest on your laurels and you don't want to be like, oh, it's because we work really hard. So we really reach into our Calvinist roots. We have, you know, the work ethic. This is just something that I personally like reckon with a lot is coming from a society that, you know, work is one of the morally a cornerstone. So morally, you should be working. Working is good for you. Work is
purpose,
takes
right?
yeah. care of kind of everything and your upstandingness as a citizen. And I mean, there's so much that, and for me, it was really intense. And I mean, I'm kind of going off on a loop, but you know, when I went to Auschwitz and saw, you know, work sets you free, I really started to, on a more deeper level, consider, you know, the culture that I am from and, you know, the Calvinist roots and what these all mean for us and, you know, some of these things that we purport and say, oh, well, that's just how it is and that's true, you know, and start considering, well, maybe that's not so true, you know, maybe it's not, or it's true for some and it's not necessarily something that is redemptive or morally on a high ground, you know? So anyway, it's been a curious path. And I think that Switzerland has been in a long way, like you say, I mean, they pride themselves on being democratic and having a federation and everybody having citizenship investment and people having equality to each other as citizens. The thing is that we're reckoning with is that we've also done it at a cost to others. And I think that that's really, like, meaning externally, say, in colonialist ways or externally to Jewish people that are fleeing the Nazis or whatever. And that really is hard for Swiss people to reckon with. They're like, I don't want to know about that because I'm really invested in this identity that we're good and that we're equal and that we're not,
so check this out, right?
I love that.
We started the conversation that you visit an exposition in Zurich on your National Museum about this topic.
Yes.
So the positivity is that, you know, you're not hiding it anymore.
Yes, we are working on it. For sure. For
sure. Yeah, and that's great, no?
Exactly. So it is great.
Switzerland has their own critical race theory now.
They have their own critical race theory.
We just went to see it in National Museum. let's not take this is great and I just felt like I want to discuss so much about Switzerland history. Tell me, how was it growing up in Switzerland? Tell me about your childhood.
I'd say it's a mixed
You have siblings? You have a big family, small family?
I have a small family. So my father is a he was a scientist, a nuclear physicist. So he was involved in sort of this post-war.
He was? Because Switzerland tried to build a nuclear bomb.
Yes.
Was your dad building it in his garage?
He was not building, as far as I know. He was interested in the sort of the post-war, energy, this potential of nuclear power having the ability to really bring people from, poverty, no electricity, no running water. Yeah. These were things that he grew up with.
Oh, nice.
And, I think he, as a Swiss person, was like, I want to be involved in something that is good for the greater good. And,
nice.
He was a researcher. I mean, he was doing everything into dark matter and stuff. I mean, he wasn't specifically just energy, but that was also an aspect of what he was doing. And and my mom was from Los Angeles.
Your mom is American?
Yes, so my mom's American. So she, they met in Los Angeles. He came over from Switzerland.
You have such a California accent.
Yes, I
and
do.
I couldn't.
I'm such a valley girl.
I couldn't grasp. And I was like, where is he coming from?
Yes.
And I was like, maybe it's Swiss. Yeah. Maybe I'm just making up stuff.
No. And her sunny, shiny disposition. everyone's always like, oh.
How did they meet?
So they met skiing in Mammoth.
In U.S.
Mammoth
Lakes in California.
Angeles,
California.
Yeah, back in, I think this would be about 65, 64, so yeah.
So
yeah.
Your mom was skiing. How your dad ended up skiing in Mammoth Lakes?
So he came over on a research assistantship at USC.
I see.
So, and then while he was there, he got his doctorate because they would just pay for it. And so he did while he was at USC.
Smart man.
Yeah, he's a smart man. He's driven. He's
Calvinist Switzerland.
Yeah. Well, and he was the only, there was four kids in the family. They were pretty, my grandfather was an engineer, but it was, they all lived in a one-bedroom apartment, one bath on Saturdays, dad goes first, he was ambitious, he wanted out of there, so yeah.
And you have siblings or you were just?
One brother? Yeah.
And he lives in Switzerland or in U.S.?
He moved to the U.S.
Also.
So, but he actually passed away just 3 years ago now. So, yeah, exactly.
Sorry about that.
Thank you. Yeah.
So you grew up, tell me, you went to school, you had friends. What city are you from?
So I'm from a small village called Endingen. It's in Aargau, Canton Aargau, which is...
We don't know where it is.
Nobody knows. It's like our Canton symbol is the carrot.
So, oh my goodness.
Says a lot.
Are you from Idaho, Switzerland?
Yes, I am from Idaho, Switzerland. Exactly. I am absolutely from
Idaho. Sorry, Idaho. Idaho is one.
No, it's a thing. It's totally a thing. So yeah.
And, small town.
It's about a half hour from Zurich.
So, do you go? Do you still, are you connect? Yeah? To the small village?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
How many people live there? How small is it?
About 1,500.
Tiny.
So,
awesome.
Yeah, they still know me.
Really?
Yeah.
The American girl?
Yeah, they're just like, oh, Lizzie's back.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's so nice. Lovely.
Yeah, there's a lot of story in the village. Old farmers, I was very good friends with farmers growing up. And
Tell me.
Their generation.
What stories?
Stories like my friend Hans, who's now dead, but he was probably born in 1905. And at the time, there was starvation, poverty in Switzerland, as much of Europe. And he was from a large farming family, as many were. And so a lot of his siblings, like many people, moved to America, just in hopes of finding land that they could work on in Switzerland. It's really highly dense and a lot of people. And so over generation to generation, your plot of land gets spliced up. Yeah. Every time you have 10 kids, one of those kids is going to get another piece of the land. They get smaller and smaller. So the point is, and he always wanted to, I would sit in his, on my way to school in the morning, I was always late, and I'd go in and visit Hans, and I'd sit in the barn with him, and he would milk cows, and he would always want to know about America, because I got to go there every few years with my mom. And I would tell him things, you know, like California. California. I went to Disneyland, you know, and he's just like, what is that? That's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, in America is this.
Big cars, big roads. Yes. Right? The sky is huge.
Yes. And he's, you know, and so later when I had moved to America, came back to Switzerland on one of these visits to my village, and I went and talked to Hans, and I said, Hans, why did you always ask me about America? Like, and he's like, well, you know, my siblings went there and I never heard from them again. You know, he said, you know, they came over and they worked, from what I can concur, probably in dairies, places like that. The mortality rate in these places was very high. I'm assume a lot of them just died. And anyway, so then late in life, like when he was 75, he took his first trip to America. And he took his housekeeper, who my mom had taught English to over the years in Switzerland. And they both put on their jackets and took their little suitcase. Literally, my friend took pictures of them and they went to America, and they go find some cousins or something. And I don't know. That's, I didn't hear so about nice. This trip. I was already in America. Yeah. But I was like, it was kind of amazing. So yeah, there's these... You know, he literally almost never left the village. So
big trip.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, rotating in and out, you know, like coming back to this village, sometimes people, there's sort of a breadth. Some people travel a ton and they're like middle class and upper middle class. Yeah. And they live and work there and this is normal. But then there's this generation of old people too. They literally barely live the village. They know their country.
We are not that old, but I tell my kids, great grandma was in a house with no plumbing.
Yes.
Right.
Oh yeah.
So I remember houses with no electricity in the wall and no plumbing in the wall.
Yes.
And then what was the progress when I was 10 or something? They built instead of outhouse, they connected. They built a bathroom connected to that, and that bathroom had plumbing.
Yes,
right? But not necessarily even anywhere else. Right.
Big deal. Yeah.
And that was a big deal.
Huge.
Great grandma has now bathroom.
Yes.
Right.
And a kitchen in which she has light potentially whenever she wants to.
Yeah.
And potentially a stove that she can cook on, and running water so she can wash and clean.
You took the plumbing from the bathroom to the kitchen, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
It was like one.
Mortality rates go down.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, such a huge, such a big.
So we're not that old. I'm saying
the
progress is enormous.
Yes.
And Switzerland actually, you know, emerged because, again, I get the collaboration, but if you see half of the Europe, you know, we don't talk about it. You know why Auschwitz is Eastern Europe, right?
Yes.
Because the Germans knew that Eastern Europeans will not riled up against. If you know, not everybody knew, but there's I'm a geek about history, but the point is they went to the land when they knew that these Eastern Europeans will not protest if they find out that there's a mass killing happening. While in Germany it would really disturb, and they had Germans too. But I'm just telling you, when the evil of Second World War, I don't know much about the First World War, Second World War, the evil spread, it took the worst out of everyone.
Yes.
And I like that. Absolutely. Europeans go through that catharsis and discuss it. While I sometimes question Americans, did they truly went through catharsis of their slavery and discuss it the same way?
Yeah.
Right? We are not responsible for us as new Americans.
Yes.
But the discussion, and you mention it even Swiss people about the banking and exploitation, right?
Yes.
And then you have the discussion.
Yes.
And I wish that Americans would not be afraid of that discussion much.
I don't know. I'd have to push back a little. I think it's like always kind of the same, honestly. I mean, even going through the exhibit in Switzerland, you know, people next to me are like, what does this have to do with me? And, you know, so. And I think, this is the same here. You know, there's going to be this swath of people that is interested in reckoning.
Yes.
I mean, the reason we're going through this in Switzerland is because of the civil rights movement in the United States, in my mind. Also, it is also part of the reason that I am here. I think they're very powerful movements. Feminism was truly a powerful movement here. The queer rights movement, very powerful.
Yeah,
I mean, people are standing up. They are putting themselves on the line. Civil rights people died. I mean, yeah. This was very intense. The Vietnam, protests. So I don't see an absence. And I think it's a conversation back and forth, you know.
I agree with you. You know what? I can switch my opinion. When you put it like that,
yes,
you are right. Mm-hmm. I cannot deny it because that's what I love. I also, Elizabeth, we would like to say that in the West Coast, we are in a bubble.
Yes.
So I
absolutely,
and I love West Coast for that, because I do this podcast. The reason is we are all sort of
protected.
We are citizens of Earth.
Yes,
and I like how in U.S., Swiss, and Czech Americans can sit down and discuss this topic.
Yes,
right. This is, you know, it's a freedom of that.
Yes,
and it's not everywhere. It's not guaranteed. Yes. I agree with you. Americans can lead the way. Yes. I just wish Alabama would do the same.
Yes. Don't we all? But, you know, Switzerland, the Conservative Party, the SVP, which is not, I mean, the SVP, Jesus, excuse me, aber das ist mega conservative. Mm-hmm. And they've grown. They've grown in...
Yeah, popularity. They're
yeah,
big.
So yeah. We have Alabama. I grew up in Alabama. Nick wants Alabama. Alabama is...
It's fine. Let's not talk bad about Alabama, but we know what it represents.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Well, okay, I will just say, like, in terms of legal things, in terms of some of the structural issues in Alabama, not people in Alabama, but some of the structural things that are still problematic. We have them here in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
But they are more preserved in some other places. And I would say Switzerland, I mean, I grew up in a country where in... our version, a very conservative part of Switzerland, women did not have the right to vote.
You are the last country in the world that allowed women to vote.
Yes, I grew up in that place. And so...
What year was that?
That was in...
It was like 67.
I was born in 69. And they
It was in the 60s when they allowed women to vote. They were the last... Some of your cantons...
Yes, but they were a holdout up until... I left in 1988, they still did not have the right to vote. Women did not have the right to vote there.
Goodness.
They hadn't taken it for themselves. Yeah. Whatever you want to, however you want to frame it. But
insane.
So we have very conservative sides, you know? And these are, So
you were allowed to go in a kitchen and make me a sandwich?
And if I did that domestically, that would be one thing. But if I would try to, say, get a job, to go make other people sandwiches and make money doing that, I would have to have my husband sign off and allow for me to do that.
Oh my goodness.
So my mom, when she moved there, her money immediately became my dad's money, for starters. And the divorce rights were not good. And my dad was... He was pretty liberal. My family's pretty bohemian over there. So it did not create, I think that particular part didn't create conflict too much, you know.
But it's good to know. There's one important point that I want to make. Switzerland was one of the last countries in the world to allow women to vote. Let's just be very frank about it. Mm-hmm. So tell me, your mom from California.
Yeah.
You grew up in this idyllic Swiss village, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Purple cows, Milky Way cows walking around, right? I saw the commercial.
The Milka cows. That's German. That's not
is
us.
It?
Yeah, Milka is a German chocolate.
Yeah, we eat that.
Do not.
I know.
Just kidding.
Exactly, right?
But for sure.
For me, you don't understand in 90s when these Western commercials show up on our black and white TV, right? With the colors and exploded.
Uh-huh.
They really mess up your mind as a child, adolescent. It's like you see that much color and they were, marketing experts working on that.
Yes.
Purple cow. Anyway, so you grew up in an idyllic village.
Yes.
And you moved to US what year? Not what year. You were 17, correct?
Yes.
So, but you traveled to US, so it wasn't like a huge shock for you.
It was, sure. I mean, I don't know.
Tell me about it.
I just did it, but...
You spoke really good English then?
Yeah, I spoke really good English. My mom taught English, so she taught us how to read and write in English. So, and then we spoke English to her in the home and German to my dad. So it was a very bilingual home. So yeah, Switzerland, I mean, you asked me,
how was US for you? You were a teenager.
Yes.
So that was kind of good, no? You felt like this is a good thing.
Yes. I mean, I wanted to leave Switzerland. I, you know, being in a village felt very confining. The structure at the time was a very confining structure. I had, you know, not, they put you into tracks in school. Mm-hmm. So after fifth grade in Switzerland, you get tracked into either a university track or a
fifth grade
or a
so early
apprenticeship track, like a sort of a mid-level or a low-level apprenticeship track. And moving between these tracks in my generation was actually quite difficult. So I was tracked into the medium one. After 9 years of schooling, I was supposed to start an apprenticeship. And I sort of just went looking at apprenticeships and it just seemed really sad. My counterparts at the time, for context, I mean, I feel like, you know, my cousins were on heroin. We had the highest suicide rate in Switzerland at the time globally. The youth, you know, this was the zeitgeist of the 80s, also in Europe. It wasn't like in America, right? We were in the middle of the Cold War. You know this. Yeah. Like, there was a lot of this, like, discontent. The youth were, like, seeing the writing on the wall. The environmental movements were starting to happen because we literally had acid rain. We know that kind of shit's hitting the fan. Like, this is troublesome. So, you know, some of, or a lot of the youth were expressing that with a sense of hopelessness and critique to the powers that be. And I wasn't really political. I was kind of a pop head, you know, 80s girl, like had a perm and was listening to, you know, Kim Wilde and going around, you know, but I think that sort of sense of that I was in a dead end was very much the case. And also as a girl, you know, people just kind of looked at me and were like, oh, she'll maybe make an apprenticeship as a sales girl and then go get married. Like, who cares? Like, we don't need to invest in her much. And I was like, okay, I feel like I'm smart and I'd like to do more, you know. And so the United States, because I had a passport and my parents paid for a plane ticket, these are significant things.
Yes.
I was able to come over and stay with a cousin in Northern California, go to high school, and then apply for university and go to university. So I had very, very kept privileged, like, opportunities, you know, that were laid out in front of me. So, and I took them and I had a great time. It was hard. I mean, I think emotionally it was difficult.
Yeah.
It was difficult.
Yeah.
You know, that's very, very difficult.
That's what I would say, you know, all the immigrant experience and yours sounds on a paper relatively easier, but I can't imagine also being a teenager and move to, you know, it's far. West Coast is far.
I was alone. I was totally alone.
That's, you know, that sense of loss, the sense of like I left everything behind.
Yes.
Is part of the immigrant experience.
Yes.
I have it, right?
Yes.
And I think most of people, there's some like couples can come or whatever, but there's a sense of loss. You bring one luggage, backpack. Yes. I brought a backpack.
Yes.
That's it. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
So there's your, you know, writings from fifth grade. All that I left, you leave. It's almost like a fire went through your home.
Yes.
Right? So you're left with a backpack and you go somewhere else and you sit it in LA now.
Yes.
And just can't relate it. It's hard.
Yes.
I get you had a sort of, you know, set up path because you had a cousin and everything. It was kind of lined up.
Yeah.
But you were alone because you start from scratch.
Yes. Yes.
And teenager can be, you know, it's one of, you know, I love my life, but teenage years, I would not like to repeat in that sense. It's just so confusing and everybody is kind of mean and it's just too much.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you did that during that years.
I mean, luckily I have, like I said, I kind of have a sunny personality. Uh-huh. And so I enjoyed myself when I came to the United States. I was pretty carefree. You know, again, my parents were paying for my room and board at this college, you know, like they had paid for a plane ticket to come over.
Yeah, that's nice.
So, you know, I wasn't having the immigrant experience of getting here and being like having nothing.
Yeah.
But that happened to me when I dropped out of college. So, I mean, kind of some of the emotional things we're talking about, it did have an impact. I broke up with my, you know, my first boyfriend, my first love, who was in Switzerland while I was in college, that kind of had this, yeah. And my parents actually moved from Switzerland to the United States while I was in college. So it took away this last piece of home I had over there. And I think both of those things were really like, I was not dealing well, like at that point. So I dropped out and I was just like, I gotta deal with this country on my own. I also don't want to be in this bubble. I was very much in a bubble. I was in a private university in Los Angeles. Yeah. I kind of, you know, it was strange. The whole thing was very strange for me. I felt uncomfortable with the class stuff I saw in this university, you know, sort of rich kids that had come from prep schools, and I had come from public education, but you know, I was just like, I had trouble signing up for all those things. And
but you went to find yourself in 20s. I kind of recommend it to everyone.
Yes,
20s is when you should experiment and try different things. So in 30s you really know where to land.
Yes,
or better, you know better where to land. You don't know it for sure.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
tell me, how did you end up in Portland?
So I came up, I got a small grant to work with Outside In, which is a street youth project here. And I was making small documentary film projects in the school I was in Los Angeles. So I came up and worked with Outside In for the summer, completed this documentary, and then started taking just whatever job I could take, basically. Mm-hmm. So it was food service.
Yeah, and then, I did that too.
Yeah, all that stuff. So, you know, learn to make an espresso already.
I know.
You know, exactly.
A latte, and then lots of scrambled eggs.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Like all that.
I had to write down what type of eggs Americans eat. It's like seven types, right?
Okay.
Poached soft, poached hard, poached medium, right? Yes. So it was like poached.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Dry scramble, like loosely scramble. Yeah, the whole brunch phenomenon, you know, like, what is that, you know?
Goodness.
So yeah, exactly.
All immigrants know about this.
Yeah,
not all. Yeah. But
yeah. Doch. I mean, I think brunching is, yeah, it's like it's a thing here.
My family from I bet, you know, like my family from distance were like, what is he doing there? He's serving food. What do, you know, he has two university degrees. And I was like, would you like some scrambled eggs?
Yes, right? Yes.
And that's,
I know, it was shocking,
but it is part of, for me, I really appreciate that happened.
And, yes.
You know, it really put my values in the right place.
Yes.
And then you see how you're building these castles, and they're kind of castles from sand castles.
Yes.
Right? Because one big event can take it all away.
That's right.
And then your values need to be grounded somewhere else. And I love that about that experience.
Yes.
So Portland. So tell me what you do now. How is it?
I have a house painting business.
Yes.
So I
love the name.
Paintingblueskies.com. Yes.
I'll put that link on our website.
Sure. Thank you.
But paintingblueskies.com. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, we need that in Portland.
Yes, exactly.
So lovely.
Exactly.
So you do that. You, how's your business? Is it going
good?
Well?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I built it originally on a sustainability model. I was really interested.
Yeah, I read that on your website.
Yeah.
So what was the, you took a course in Zurich about sustainability painting or something.
I worked with a trades cooperative over there. So, and I learned from them their business model as well on
what is the basics, or?
The basics are, I mean, for painters, a lot has to do with just the materials they use. Mm-hmm. So they're low VOCs and things like that. Honestly, I was working some of those. I don't really actually use those elements of sustainability. For me, I learned my trade on old homes here in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, old, they're 100 years
old. Yes,
old homes, those. But so I really, the sustainability came more from giving clients a really high quality, long lasting product. So that sometimes requires that the product you use in their homes is a bit more toxic, you know, but it's sort of a thinking I sort of offset with, like, well, you know, this is going to preserve wood. This is going to give you, you don't have to replace this wood. It's 100 years old. So, you know, it's a nice, what do I say, chess game of, you know, like, figuring it all out. But
I believe in, again, you know, these values are important.
Yes.
You can see how,
yes,
you know, we struggle with the climate chaos now.
Yes.
So, you know, do you know LEED certified?
Yes.
My wife is a chairwoman of the board of whole LEED.
Okay.
So she's the top person in LEED.
Nice.
Right? And she now, actually, I think she's pushing new strategy that the sustainability is not just environmental, it's also societal. And, you know, there's like more aspects to sustainability than just low VOC.
Yes, exactly. Low VOC was like... Okay, that's great. Exactly.
I've been in China, and anytime they paint anything,
it's true.
It's so toxic.
It's crazy. It's true.
And it's, you know, that I forgot the material, but I remember growing up when you paint something, you can never scrape it, but it smells like terrible. But it's impenetrable, the paint, right?
So, yes, exactly. Exactly.
So that I'm saying it's little steps.
Yes.
And I you know, we will look at them as like silly, but.
No, I mean, I didn't want to be a part of something that was making things worse.
Yeah,
I just wanted to be a part of something that was making things better. That's all there is to.
And that's the Calvinist Switzerland in you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, my dad, you know, energy for all. I was like, okay, well, I want to just,
That's not bad.
For
that's
myself.
Not bad. So what are your hobbies? We were trying to schedule our podcast and you went to Switzerland, right? So you go every year or?
Yes, I go for Christmas just the last few years.
Okay,
so I've
nice.
Been starting to go for Christmas, but before that
snow,
I would go once
lots
a year.
Of snow?
Yes, there is snow and I love to ski. I started downhill skiing again 3 years ago and I used to be so good. I just love being in the mountains.
Yeah, every Swiss
there.
Person skis.
Yes,
right?
I know.
You guys all ski, downhill ski.
Yes. The Alps are, the mountains are such a big part of our identity. Yeah. Exactly.
It's
and that
very,
health thing.
No, but the Alps are so magnificent. They're not, you know, in US, like the mountains here are like big and grandiose.
Yes.
It's all smaller but more intense.
Yes.
That's how I would describe it. It's so condensed and like you just see the, you know, the mountain and it just blow you away how they look. They're so magnificent.
Yes.
It's not that American vast Grand Canyon.
Yes.
But Alps are something different altogether. It's very unique.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we've had, you know, with this incredible wealth we've had now in Switzerland, recently. Yeah. I mean, we've never been like this. Like, this is really new, even though we're like, oh, yeah, like, wow, we totally do this all the time.
Yeah, it's you have the all the indexes, the per capita, the wealth, the assets.
That's insane.
You also have you always leading in the innovation index.
Yes.
So anyway,
our infrastructure is crazy. So
is
when I go over there, and so we're talking about the Alps, for instance, like I say this to friends, you know, like just... Yeah, the Alps are beautiful, but what's also so exceptional is they've built all this infrastructure that allows people to go deep into the mountains. We're talking gondolas. We're talking like...
Tunnels.
Yeah, we're talking...
Trains
that are built to go up and into mountains. Like, so you can... My auntie, who's 85, sits next to me in the train and we go into some pretty remote areas of Switzerland, take a little gondola up. So that really makes a big difference in terms of this experience of the Alps. People are like, oh, yeah, okay.
So you travel to Switzerland. Yeah. Do you travel anywhere else?
Yes. I mean, years ago, I go to South Africa for a month. I went to Thailand for the first time a couple years ago. I love to travel by myself.
Okay. That's different.
Yeah, I love it. I can really slow down and take my time and be close to what's ever happening there, right? Present, meet people.
Yeah.
Have time to talk to people, get to know what's going on.
When I travel, my increments are 45 minutes based on my children.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. No.
Time for yourself. I'm like, I had these like look at you and I was like, oh, wow. Now, I used to travel a lot for business. So it's different, right? So you travel by yourself, it's different.
Yeah,
I like that.
So Mexico. Yeah, Guatemala, like,
So for our listeners, so last piece of that podcast is advice to anybody from Switzerland or anywhere in the world, they want to come and make US their home.
Oh.
Any advice?
Advice.
It doesn't have to be, you know, your friend... He's still alive, let's say, the old guy. What would you tell him when he comes to US?
I would just say, you know, slow down, take your time, and talk to people here. You know, they're often not what you think.
Mm.
You know, I think there's a lot of ideas about what Americans are in the rest of the world. And they're lovely people. They're very rich in kindness and skilled in community building and connecting and being helpful. And, you know, I mean, there's just, it's a fantastic place. I mean, if you have access to the riches of, you know, intellectual goods and things like that, those are wonderful too. But just a basic encounters of coming over, and
they're so open.
You know, don't be frightened by the neglect and the poverty. It's a real thing here. And take your time, take a look. You know, look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Be
yeah.
with it.
Yep.
You know, so it's wirklich, yeah, so it's a rich experience over
here. I agree with you. It's so, I found Americans so charitable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a kind of kindness of like, I'll give you some of mine.
Yep.
And then there's the contrast of the poverty and neglect, right?
Yep.
Because of lack of public policy, I truly believe that.
Sure.
The contrast, I like what you're saying, take your time, because you will find Americans very friendly, kind, and and nice people in general.
Yes.
Right? We also have
the soulful.
Soulful too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that was great. Thank you, Elizabeth.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming, and hopefully we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me so much. It was fun.
Bye.
Yeah, it was really fun. Bye.